asphalt system, although little remained to show it. The concrete walls had been stripped and were untidily whitewashed. In the center of the room was a block of wood, coffin-sized. Straps attached to rings set into it hung down almost to the concrete floor. Ryan could not tell what kind of wood the block was made of because of the discoloration, the reddish-brown staining that was a crusted veneer on the flat surface, a rusty seepage down the sides. So much blood had drenched that block over the years that it had soaked deep into the wood's heart. On metal hooks around the walls hung an assortment of implements, knives, saws, meat spikes, a number of what looked like old cattle prods. In one corner, near where stairs disappeared down to what was almost certainly the main vault itself, stood a small generator, a jumble of wires piled near it. Ryan saw there were electric wall sockets at intervals around the lower part of the walls, hence the hand-cranked generator, he supposed. If the mains were acting up, they could always switch to that. More stairs were beyond the woodblock, linking the room to the street-level floor above. There were 5 sec men by the stairs. The man who had spoken was one of these. A squat, barrel-chested guy with fingers like sausages, heavy-lidded eyes, and a bulbous nose that contained more than its fair share of destroyed blood vessels. He was licking his lips, looking at the 2 girls.
That one gets off on agony, does he?
Don't concern yourself. So, what is this deal? It seems to me, Ryan, you've lost your bargaining position.
You don't have the train. I have the train. Sure, it won't nuke up, but she'll blow. Nice firework display. And you're gonna have your work cut out sifting through the wreckage for anything worthwhile.
But I have you and the traitor.
No, you don't have the traitor either. You put them all to sleep, right? When are they gonna wake up? Got an answer? And what are you gonna do when they do wake up? Keep putting them back to sleep again? How are you gonna know when they wake up anyway? You got guys peering through the windows at them, waiting for the first twitch? Listen, when those guys wake up, they're gonna be mad. And they're gonna start doing bad things. How many men do you have out there, Strasser? Not a regiment, I'd guess. Maybe you have too many guys out at the mines.
You've been busy.
Shit. You can't keep something like that under wraps.
It's nothing that can't be coped with. A minor disturbance.
Crap. This place is falling apart, Strasser. Too many years under one owner. The longer I'm here, the more the smell of rotten decay is stinking up my nostrils. Teague's been pushing stuff out east, hasn't he?
It was not, in fact, a question. To Ryan, everything had become crystal clear. Strasser was getting out. The revolt at the mines had been the final straw. He'd probably been waiting to get rid of Jordan Teague for months, maybe years. Strasser knew exactly what Ryan was saying, and his eyes darted nervously to his men at the bottom of the stairs.
You're digging yourself deep, Ryan. Deeper by the second.
No deeper than I have to. I told you, we can still deal.
Strasser was standing beside the blood-soaked block. He was running a hand thoughtfully across its surface, backward and forward, staring down at the motion of his hand, his thin lips pursed. An altar, thought Ryan suddenly. An altar devoted to Strasser's own particular god of pain and torment. He doubted that many of Strasser's sec men knew their leader's plans. An inner circle, perhaps, but not these suckers here. Maybe the guy with the red nose and the sausage fingers. He looked to be a kindred spirit.
Let me have him, I tell ya!
Silence! Carson, Third, downstairs. Fetch what I discussed with you earlier.
The 2 guards grinned at each other as they clumped across the room and disappeared. Ryan leaned back against the whitewashed wall, folding his arms. JB glanced at Ryan, raising an eyebrow. Ryan shrugged. He looked at the 2 girls and Cole. All 3 expressionless, waiting, biding their time. He was glad that these 3 were left. He knew their worth.
So, Strasser, how long you been waiting to give Teague the heave-off?
Ever since he did the same to Dolfo Kaler. Did you ever hear of Dolfo Kaler?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Before your time. Kaler had a stake in Moxon. He wasn't as big as Jordan, but he had power. Contacts with the East. In the early days. But he had this thing about the Darks. He thought there was something up there. Maybe there is. A lot of people seem to believe so. Maybe one of these fine days I should take a look around. But Kaler didn't find it, whatever it was. Crawled back with nothing and got his head blown off for his pains. Jordan Teague made out that Kaler had the plague. It just blew him out. That's when Jordan took over completely. It's long been in my mind to... my men are returning. It has already occurred to me, Ryan, that it will take time to squeeze you dry. And I'm aware that your close colleague Dix doesn't gab much. Therefore, I thought of turning my attention to your three companions, the ladies especially. And then I thought, no, you're all the same. Close-mouthed, stupidly loyal, stupidly stubborn. The women might well take less time to crack, but even so, I'm not in the mood to linger. And so I set to wondering how detached you were, Ryan. How indifferent you could be to the sufferings of an entirely neutral party. The thought fascinated me. After all, we live in violent and selfish times. Every man for himself and the hell with the rest. That's surely the philosophy of anyone faced with an unpleasant and painful situation. Even so, it did occur to me to wonder if the age of, what's the word I'm seeking? Gallantry? Yes, that'll do. Gallantry. Excellent word. Nicely old-fashioned. Yes, I did wonder if the age of gallantry was not entirely buried beneath the ashes of the nuke. It seemed a good opportunity to try a small experiment. It won't take long. 10 minutes at the most, I should imagine, once we're underway. And of course, I may be making a stupid mistake, a wild error of judgment. I may well be wasting your time and mine. We shall see.
Strasser glanced to his right, toward the doorway that led to the vaults. The two guards appeared, hustling a third person up to the top of the stairs and out into the room, each holding an arm. The shock of recognition was, for Ryan, far greater than the panic burn that had flared through him when Strasser had glibly talked of taking his good eye out. But the jolt he felt inside him only made itself manifest by a slight quiver of his eyes, plus the freezing into stunned immobility of his features for maybe a half second. But it was enough for Strasser. Unholy delight glowed in his eyes. His thin lips split into a reptilian grin.
You know her, Ryan. A friend of yours. Well, that does make it easier.
It was the flame-haired girl, Christy Roth. Ryan wondered how Strasser knew. Then he tried to steel himself. This was a coincidence. And looked at objectively, she was nothing to him. Up until this morning, he wasn't even aware she existed. Strasser was all set to torture and humiliate her in the most gross and obscene and bloody way possible. But so what? So fucking what? Angry, his face set, feeling strangely betrayed, he stared at the scene in front of him. Strasser grinned like a malignant ape, the guards gazed lustfully at the girl, and the girl herself, a gag in her mouth, her rich red hair scraped back into a tightly knotted ponytail, tensed her body against the two-handed grip of her captors. Her face, Ryan noted automatically, was expressionless. There was no way of telling what she was thinking, either from her features or from her eyes. It looked as if she had somehow blanked herself out, consciously wiped herself clean of all emotion. If this was so, he wondered how long it would last. He was attracted to her, deeply attracted. There were depths to her he had rarely seen in other women, a fact that had been clear to him in the few hours they'd been together and talked. There had been a possibility that she was worth pursuing. That had ended when he'd learned the shattering news that most of the traitor's people on this trip were dead, nerved out, her among them. And that had been that. What did they used to say? Ships that pass in the night. It had not only never gotten anywhere, it had never even started. The momentary ache had been for something that might have been, and that prospect had been highly debatable. And now, here she was, alive. He was aware that the squat man with the red nose had been whispering something to Strasser, something about him, his face alive with ghoulish glee.
Never mind Ryan. He's in a dream. This one'll soon wake him up. The way she'll be screaming will be enough to waken a dead man. Strip her, Kilber.
With pleasure.
Kilber walked toward the girl. He placed both hands on her breasts and began clutching at them, squeezing them roughly. Anger and loathing flared in Christie's eyes,
No time for that, Kilber. I promised my friend Ryan that this wouldn't take long.
Oh, shit, sir. Won't be nothing left to have fun with once we're finished with the bitch reamed her out.
Alas, no. It does seem a shame, all things considered. She's certainly a delightful creature. But you are so right, Kilber. There will not be much left in the, organic sense once we're done. But what must be, must be.
Couldn't we just use the prod? You know I'm good with the prod, sir. Got it down to a real fine art. You know I can make her jump and it won't damage the merchandise. Well, not too much, anyway.
No prod, Kilber. I know you're a devil with it, but no prod.
Ryan discovered his mouth was dry, and he swallowed, tried to bring spit up into his throat. All this was solely for his benefit, he knew. A cruel and ghastly jest. A sickening parody of polite and civilized behavior that only someone like Strasser would get off on. Kilber went quickly to work, himself clearly bored with all the jollity that his master enjoyed. He pulled off her boots, unzipped the green jump, and while the two guards held her tightly, stripped it off. Kilber unzipped the one-piece body sheath underneath and peeled it slowly downward, first revealing her breasts, full yet firm, hanging free, then her taut stomach and the softly swelling roundness of her lower belly, the Titian triangle of hair at her thighs, sharply etched against the whiteness of her skin. He dragged the body sheath off finally and tossed it aside.
Oh, such a pity, all things considered. Tie her down.
The sec man turned her and shoved her face down toward the block, then pulled her forward along it so that her breasts were squashed under her weight against the rusty wood, her wrists thrust forward and shackled by the straps, her pelvis jammed down just above the end of the table, on the lip, so that her legs dangled over the side. Or at least would have dangled if she had only been still. But she was kicking wildly, violently, the heel of one foot clubbing up into the jaw of the guard who was trying to grab it.
Oh! Bitch! Made me bite my fucking tongue!
Carson, you idiot! Guards! The rear straps! Get the rear straps!
The two guards sprang forward from the front and controlled her, yanking her legs apart so that her buttocks involuntarily arched, rising into the air, exposing the cleft between the legs. They finished strapping her into position, as Carson glared at the twitching figure of the young woman. At that moment, Ryan decided there was no way he could go through with this. He took a step forward, and instantly the guard beside the doorway swung his M16 up, his finger tight on the trigger.
Ah, Ryan. Yes?
Look, I don't know what all the fuss is about, Strasser. Sure, I know her. She was on the train. We picked her up. She was having trouble with some muties. Other than that...
How interesting.
Ryan turned to glance at JB. It seemed to him that JB's face was blanker than he'd ever seen it. He turned back. Only Strasser and Kilber were near the block now. The guards were fanned out around the room, rifle ready. He couldn't have reached any of them before. Now the situation was worse. Pay your debts, said the trader. Always pay your debts. He owed Trader everything. And now Trader was spark out in Warwag 1, maybe slumped in a chair, maybe sprawled out on the metal floor, and wholly at the mercy, whichever way you cut it, of Cord Strasser. And what did Ryan owe Christie? He owed her his life. Simple as that. He could suddenly feel the sticky, slimy pads on his face, the immense sucking power causing his cheeks to expand away from his own bones. He could actually feel it, a tactile rerun, as though hundreds of tiny needles were stabbing and slashing around inside his cheeks, his mouth, his jaw, a fierce agony that would not cease until the flesh was ripped off of his skull, leaving a scarlet ruin of dripping, bloody pulp. He felt himself trembling. He leaned back against the wall. Sweat was oozing out of his pores.
Kilber?
Kilber patted a breast pocket of his black jacket, inserted a hand, and fished out a small box. At the same time, the guard by the upper doorway turned and disappeared up the steps to the floor above.
Now pay attention, Ryan.
Strasser took the box from Kilber and held it to his ear, shook it gently. What he heard seemed to please him. He looked around as the sec man re-entered the room. He was holding a tall, empty drinking glass. Strasser nodded to Kilber, who took the glass, then carefully opened the box. He tipped the contents into the glass. From where he stood, Ryan saw a flutter of something small and dark as whatever it was hit the bottom of the glass. Stresser took the glass and gazed at it critically, holding it up to the naked light set into the ceiling above him. A satisfied smile slithered across his face. He turned to Ryan and stepped toward him, still holding the glass up. Ryan caught a flicker of frenzied movement at the bottom.
Fascinating insect, Mutie. Some kind of cross between a borer beetle and a termite. But this little beauty has certain characteristics you don't find in either.
Ryan stared at the glass. The thing was bigger than he'd thought, maybe as big as a human thumb, streamlined. He saw a black and shiny carapaced back, and four horned antennae quivering at the front. The insect scrabbled around in the glass, its six legs slipping on the smooth surface. It stopped suddenly, facing him. He peered closer, aware that the nearest guard had thrust the barrel of his M16 almost to his left temple. Ryan saw that the labrum flap over the insect's mouth hardly concealed mandibles that seemed grotesquely out of proportion to its size. Huge, sickle-shaped tusks, almost like horns. The compound eyes, small though they were, seemed to glitter in the light, their honeycomb of lenses directed at him. The insect was quivering gently. Ryan couldn't get it out of his mind that he was being studied, noted, categorized. It turned suddenly, rushed at the opposite side of the glass, launched itself at the transparent walls of its prison, and fell back, its legs waving wildly. It landed on its shiny back, rolled on the instant, and became mobile once more.
Ugly little brute, but fascinating. Does it like wood at all? Meat eater. But it doesn't like dead meat, Ryan. Fastidious. Likes its food on the hoof, you might say. But the really curious thing is it seems to have a positive yen for human flesh. We discovered this quite by chance when we popped one into the mouth of someone who had displeased me. The insect ate its way out of his stomach, right through the entrails. You probably noted its somewhat overlarge mandibles. Remarkable, don't you think?
Yeah!
Ryan flung himself at the gaunt man, his hands outstretched to claw and tear and rend whatever he could grasp. Ryan reeled, smashed to the concrete floor by the M16 barrel rammed into the side of his head. The world blazed up in a brilliant flash of light that seared his eye, exploded through his head, fierce agony lancing through his brain. Something heavy landed on him. He sought to fling it off, but a booted foot slammed into his head, and more pain flooded through him, slashing at his nerve ends. He found that his arms were suddenly twisted behind him, his legs held to the floor under some heavy weight. Through a haze of pain and fury and disgust, he heard Strasser's voice.
Take the gag out of her mouth and stuff it into Ryan's.
His head was wrenched back by the hair, and he tried to grit his teeth together, but someone pinched his nostrils tight, and involuntarily, he gasped open his mouth. The gag filled it, and he dry heaved, his senses screaming that he had to have air. He could hear snorted squealing sounds, and could only suppose they emanated from him, the fingers unclasped. His head throbbed agonizingly. It was as if someone had plunged a knife rhythmically and repeatedly into the soft core of his brain. Suddenly he was lurching forward, being shoved and dragged toward the wooden block until he was staring wildly, frantically, up into the rear of the girl. Strasser was standing near him, beside the girl, one hand holding the glass, the other pushing one of the smooth white globes of her buttocks.
Now, which shall it be? Anal or vaginal passage? Difficult to choose. If the former, it will at least mean that Kelber's animal lusts will not remain entirely unsatisfied, if only for a short time. Kelber has often been known to make the best of a bad job, Ryan. He is, I fear, not very discriminating in his tastes. If the latter, of course, I doubt that even Kelber would care to try his luck where something as voracious as this little brute has already been. What do you say, Ryan? Back or front, No answer? How very churlish. Front, I think.
He placed the lip of the glass against the broad, full cheeks and began to push it under the girl toward the dark cleft, tipping it gently upward as he did so. Ryan struggled like one possessed of many devils. His head jerked back, his chest bulged. He could feel the tendons and veins on his arms spring out like corded cables. Strasser glanced down at him, smiling with his mouth but not his eyes, and tipped the glass up some more. It was now almost horizontal. The beetle began to scurry along the smooth, curved path until it had about reached its goal. It stopped, antennae quivering. Then it scurried on remorselessly, at last reaching flesh, a portion of buttock fringed by coarse red hair, short and curly, just glimpsed. The antennae extended toward the white skin as though testing the air. Presumably satisfied with the intelligence it had gathered, the insect began to move slowly, inexorably, out of Ryan's sight. Frantically nodding his head, adrenaline flooding through him like liquid fire, Ryan managed to inch himself forward, heaving those guards atop along by the sheer strength of his frenzy. Strasser looked down at him again, regarded him thoughtfully, coolly, gauging his surrender. Then rammed the glass hard into the girl's rear, at the same time flipping its mouth slightly upward, the sudden movement catching the beetle, the lip of the glass tossing it into the air. It curved high, legs scrabbling at nothing, and for a split second seemed to hang weightless at the peak of its parabola. Then gravity took over, and it dropped. Strasser neatly caught it in the glass and beamed in triumph, as though he had just performed a particularly naughty conjuring trick. He gave the glass and the box to Kelber.
Excellent. Take him out to one of the trucks. The girl, too. Dress her. These others, I was going to say kill them, but no. Take them downstairs, one of the cells. I'll deal with them personally when we return.
Ryan felt himself gripped under the armpits and dragged to his feet. He needed that. Right now, he felt incapable of supporting himself on his own. Strasser caught up with him. The gaunt man with the skull face reached out, took hold of the gag in his mouth, and tore it out.
You're dead, Strasser. Dead.
No. You're dead.
The heavy steel door thudded into place. Carson's face, still blood-smeared around the mouth, appeared in the barred opening. Another of the guards behind him.
Think I'll have the slinky black bitch, Ferd. Ain't had black meat in a while.
You know, Sam, I bet that dick's prick is about as big as my pinky. Hard. I betcha.
You find out how big it is, bitch! Get the fucking prod! Time I'm finished with you, your cunt'll be as green as your hair.
Cute. Hey, you think he knows where a girl's whoopee actually is?
Shut it, Honecker.
Honecker shut it and shrugged. She turned away from the door with an exaggerated yawn. Carson, his face suffused with rage, disappeared from the opening, clattering off up the passageway with the other guard.
Too mouthy.
Fuck it. The wimp got up my nose.
You just pray he doesn't stick the prod up your nose. Honecker.
Oh, come on, JB. Ain't the end of the world. We'll get out of this one.
If we're lucky. Doesn't help when you feel a spike of that guy. You're gonna have to make up to him, or one of them.
Oh, crap. Does that mean I have to promise them all they can manage? Like that?
I want at least two in the corridor.
Come on, JB. Why does it have to be me?
Well, preferably both of you.
Well, okay, but it's bad theater, JB. I mean, I like old Collinson here, but I don't fancy him. Something about that mustache of his. You won't get a performance from the heart, you know what I mean?
Thanks for nothing. I didn't mean call.
What? Oh, yeah? Me and Sam? Hey! How'd you know, JB? Been trying for a date for a hog's age. Jesus! Look, JB, I got no intention of showing off my box to those bastards.
Sure. Let's hope the situation doesn't arise.
The room went quiet. Into both young women's minds, an image of the blood-stained block slid like a poisonous snake. JB sat down on the concrete floor and began to unlace his right combat boot.
Just put on a show is all. Ain't worth shit. You know it, I know it.
Fuck it. Just because we got tits and all. I mean, why don't you guys stand there waving your dongs around?
Ain't gonna do much to these guys.
You speak for yourself, Buster.
You really think the train... all gone?
You were there. You heard what Cone said, what the other guy said.
JB tugged his boot, pulled it off. He put a hand inside it and began working at the inner sole with his fingers.
You think we got a chance?
Maybe 60-40.
Yeah? That's better than I imagined.
60-40 to them.
Fire blasting newt shit.
Just wave those tits around. I'll give you better odds.
Thanks a bunch, big boy. Just as long as some of them die nasty.
Sam was now beside the door, peering out through the bars at the empty corridor. Call had joined JB on the floor and was pulling his own boots off. Hunniker unfastened the belt she was wearing and began to rip out the false bottoms of all her empty ammo pouches. She unhooked her water bottle, uncapped it, wiped it with her sleeve, and took a swig. Then she eased the webbing around it, slid the flask out, began peeling off wafer-thin strips of a grayish and doughy-looking substance wound around it. Plastique. Some things just never change.
How are we gonna do it?
Blow the door. Look at it. Doesn't quite fit. Opens outward, too. Makes it easier.
Old eagle eye.
JB smiled faintly. He did not mind being teased by people he trusted, and he trusted these people and knew that they trusted him and relied on him. That was all that mattered. He was peeling back the inner sole of his boot to reveal a hollow cavity, long and narrow, carved out of the specially built-up, thick-soled footwear. He stopped what he was doing and gazed around the room. It was bare-walled and bare-floored, an oblong roughly 1.5 times square. There was no furniture of any kind, no bunks, tables, chairs, anything. It was a cold concrete box, lit by a low-watt bulb high out of reach in the ceiling.
As I understand it, this lower level of the bank building used to contain the main vault and safe deposit rooms. When it was revamped, they built thick-walled cells, all with steel doors with steel-barred viewing windows. The doors are not as thick as the walls, but are solid enough, even though the whole thing was done by builders who were skimping the whole time. Probably in a hurry, but with Teague's goons cracking the whip over them. This cell's an end room, one of a bunch in a long corridor that leads back to the stairway. That's useful, being at the end of the passage, the farthest from the stairs. But sound still carries. We're going to have to be careful. Figure this as accurately as possible. The door's at one end of the wall. That's useful, too. Means that when we blow the door, none of us need be directly opposite it. And it's good that the door opens outward, but it's lousy planning for what was supposed to be a secure cell. With a door that opens outward, there's always a chance that during the short time when the door's being opened and the opener's not sighting the entire cell, the prisoner can jump his jailer. Then again, most of the prisoners down here probably wouldn't be in fit enough condition to jump a mouse after Strasser's goons were done with them.
From his boot, JB began picking out equipment that looked like tools for a dollhouse. Matchstick detonators, plastic wafers no bigger than a fingernail, minuscule screws, a tiny screwdriver. He sat cross-legged and opened his brown leather jacket. He slid down the lining with his thumbnail beside the zipper tracks on the left. Sewn inside the lining was a long leather pouch, very slightly fatter than the average cheroot. JB extracted and emptied it. The contents were long rods of cobweb-thin wire. He selected more bits and pieces from his other boot and settled down to work. His lean fingers dexterously coiled the wire, fitting the tiny screws to the power pack he was creating. Hunniker stepped over to the door and peered at it.
See what you mean. We can stuff a hell of a lot of explosive down along here. Shit. In some places, the door didn't even touch the frame. Great workmanship.
Not too much explosive. Too much plastique, we get too much noise. Could damage us, too.
Yeah, and too little, and all we get's a big spark and a fart and the door stays put.
Hunniker, let me see that plastic explosive you're rolling into strings.
This okay? Too fat?
Not bad. Roll it some more and slap it in.
When Hunniker started to stuff the material down the right-hand side of the door, thumbing it down, then along the lintel at the top, JB got up and jabbed a finger at a spot about halfway down the door.
More in there. Three times what you already have. That's where the locking device is.
He went back to the center of the room, sat down cross-legged again, and continued his construction work. There was a long silence while Cole tossed plastique from his own boots to Hunniker, and Hunniker molded the doughy substance around the matchstick detonators, squashing the strips into cracks and crevices, lacing it around the doorframe, all the time trying to avoid Sam's sightline to the corridor outside.
What do you reckon about Ryan?
What about him?
He blew out up there.
It happens.
You think he's got the hots for that Roth woman?
Probably.
You think we'll see him again?
Knowing Ryan? Yeah.
He's been in a few tight ones like this, hadn't he? I mean, with you and all.
That he has.
You know where he came from originally?
Out east, I think.
You think? How long have you known Ryan? Must be 10 years at least. You don't even know where his kin are? I bet you don't even know his other name.
Is this some kind of pre-combat intelligence test?
Well, do you?
No.
Does anyone?
Traitor, maybe.
Rumor is he was a runner from somewhere.
Only muties are runners.